You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
You are indeed on the couch with me, your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle, as you always are about this time every Friday, 11 o'clock in the morning. Of course, that's Pacific Standard Time. Here on the West Coast, it is a beautiful day today in the summer. Hope you can join me because I've got a great show as usual. Got a super author I'll be telling you about in a minute, and I'll also be answering listeners' questions. Yeah, I'd like to get to some of your questions. And by the way, if you'd like to write me and contact me, find out more about me, you can just click on my webpage here on LA Talk Radio, or you can check out my email. My address on the web is Dr. Michelle Therapy, drmichelletherapy.com. That's Dr. Michelle. You don't have to spell doctor out the whole way. It's just Dr. And if you'd like to ask me any questions on the show, you can click on the show email address, which is docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. And what I try to do is establish to you that I'm not really your therapist. We don't have a therapeutic relationship, you and I. But I can try to give you suggestions, give you advice, help you out, hopefully entertain you a little bit. Not to laugh at anybody, but there's a lot of cool emails and questions that I'd like to get to today after my interview, because I've been hearing from a lot of folks saying, hey, you didn't respond to that. So I'll do that. How's that? By the way, my guest today is the author of a really interesting book, Fast Read, Fun Read, and it's called Muffins and Mayhem. What? Yeah, Muffins and Mayhem, Recipes for a Happy, If Disorderly Life. And you know, that jumped out, being a psychologist, that disorderly life thing jumped out to me, and I thought, this looks kind of cool. The author is Suzanne Beecher, and she's been around a while. She has her own very successful online book club called DearReader.com. And in this book, what I really dug about it is she talks about her own difficult childhood years and how she evolved, her evolution from single, drug-addicted teen mother to successful businesswoman, mother, grandmother, and wife of her best friend, who was, of course, the man of her dreams. So when a lot of people out there listen to her, you know, it's kind of like amazing, because I've spoken to her a couple of times. She's just so full of life and excitement, and her writing is really good, too. I mean, it just pulls you right along into her stories, and she's very funny. She's hilarious. She should be a stand-up comedian. Anyway, she also puts down some of the recipes that she's learned along her life to kind of help soothe the soul. And she says that with love and dedication, even the most challenging obstacles will be overcome. So hopefully we're going to find out, you know, how she did that and some of the stuff she went through and, you know, how she learned to overcome her difficulties. And if you would like to email me in regards to the interview today, anything you might hear, questions you might want to ask Suzanne Beecher, you can do so, again, on my website, which is docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. Again, you can also look on the webpage here on LA Talk Radio, the world's most popular radio station. It's all over, baby. And every kind of interesting host in the world is on LA Talk Radio. And so, by the way, all you have to do is log on to my webpage. You find the links, and you can contact me anyhow, anywhere, if you would like to, via email. Or, of course, you can always call in on the show if you'd like. And I welcome that too. Number's 323-203-0815. That number again is 323-203-0815. And also today, a little bit later, I'll be getting to some of your questions regarding what do you do if you fell head over heels in love with someone online and you've been communicating a while? Yeah, what do you do? I don't even care if you've had a, you know, Skype chat and you get to look at them and talk to them. You gotta see them in person. So we'll talk about that. Also, we're going to be talking about what is actually excessive sexual desire. Yeah, have one of those questions. She's really been bugging me about that. And not in a negative way. I just want to help her out psychologically, sort of how to deal with it. It's not her problem. Not a problem necessarily, but she sees it as a problem with her friend. And also, what to do when you're hot and heavy on the text action with someone who you really love and they go away for about 3 days. Not physically, but via text, via phone, via email. They're gone. So what do you do? I'm going to help also this listener try to answer this question as well. And many others who've written me at docmichelle@AOL.com. And that way, what I can do is I've already called and cleared these questions and emailed and cleared these questions with you. I will never mention your real name on the air so that you can, you know, stay with me live here and get a feeling for what you need. Some of the answers that you need to hear, some of the advice. And again, we don't have a psychological relationship. I'm not your therapist, but I am a licensed psychologist and I can give you some advice, especially on relationship issues, because I am a relationship expert and I've been working with couples for a long time. And that also goes into the idea of self-esteem, working on your self-esteem, working on who you are, taking good care of yourself, and things like that. So there you go. If you would like to email me, you may do so, again, at docmichelle@AOL.com, docmichelle@AOL.com. And, of course, I have many times answered your questions via email, and you asked that I didn't put you on the air, which is fine. That's cool. I have no problem with that. You don't necessarily have to go, you know, on the air or anything if you are, you know, emailing me about anything on the show here. All right, so that's a good idea. And again, you can find out what I'm all about by my website, which is drmichelletherapy.com. And again, you don't spell out doctor, it's just Dr. Michelle with two L's therapy.com. And that way, what we can do is we can work together. You can find out more about what I'm about, which is, you know, positive life changes. We do look back. We do kind of go through issues we've had. And also, it's nice to go forward and start from today, which is all you have, and work on your thoughts, work on your cognitions, as we say, work on a lot of the bad habits that you've had by so many different things, so many different techniques you can do. And getting out from that drama a lot of times in our relationships, being a relationship expert, what I hear about is a lot of really negative patterns of acting and reacting with each other in relationships. So what I try to do is detox you from the drama. All right? Cool. We're going to see if our special guest is on the line now. And again, we have author Suzanne Beecher from Muffins and Mayhem, Recipes for a Happy, if Disorderly, Life. All right. Hi. Is this Suzanne?
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm sorry. I had trouble getting through for some reason.
Well, you know, it's live radio. What can I say? How are you?
I think it's on the Sarasota end.
Oh, there you go. Oh, so you're in Sarasota. Mm-hmm. And so how's it going today? So nice to have you with me.
Thank you.
I was kind of building up your book a little bit and telling listeners, you know, why I really enjoyed it, and also about the title, which is really a fun book, The Muffins and Mayhem, Recipes for a Happy, if Disorderly, Life. And it's cool. I love your sense of humor, too. You are a crack-up, Suzanne. You really are funny.
Well, thanks. It's easy to make fun of myself because I end up in a lot of crazy situations. And I learned a long time ago that if, you know, I used to kind of hide things that were embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then I realized if I just tell somebody, it's not such a big deal. actually people laugh and find it entertaining, and I go on my merry way.
There you go. And I think that's a big problem with a lot of people. I mean, they think that everybody knows their what's going on within them, or their secrets are, and they're embarrassed, and they, you know what? I think that's a great dish of advice there. You know, they just don't take themselves too seriously and try not to hide this stuff. I mean, there you go. You put it out there, and hey, that's what, I'm a human being, and we all do stuff, and you move on, you know?
Well, and it's kind of like I've noticed that when I, you know, share an embarrassing situation with somebody else, it makes me more approachable. Like,
yes,
they, it kind of invites them to open up and just be themselves.
That's really true.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice conversation.
Yeah. Well, what kind of tipped you off or inspired you to write your book, Muffins and Mayhem, Recipes for a Happy, If Disorderly Life, Suzanne?
Well, I do, I write an online book club at dearreader.com. I write a column there. I do online book clubs for thousands of libraries around the country, including a library at LA. And, in the daily column every day, I got an email from a woman who'd been reading with me for a number of years, a young mother. She had three children. And she said that she had, cancer, and it was terminal, and that she had recently read a column of mine where I talked about a file where I kept just things that I'd written or seen, that, where I could go and I could read these things when I felt like I needed to get myself grounded. And she said that, you know, she realized this is exactly what she wanted to leave behind for her children, because, you know, there are going to be times when they wish their mom was there, important times in their life, or they wanted to ask her something. So in my response to her, I don't know how, but I just, you know, I started thinking about, like, my grandmother left me a couple of her recipe boxes. So I have a lot of recipes in her hand. Following one of them, it's kind of like grandma's right in the kitchen with me.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So I told this woman, I said, you know, here's my suggestion. I think you should make recipe boxes, one for each of your children. You should put your favorite recipes, you know, the ones people always rave about. But you should also, on those recipe cards, write down a question and then answer it for them. And I gave her some suggestions, like, you know, what did it, what was it like when they first met, their dad, you know, before they got married? Tell your kids about someday that you told a white lie and then what happened and what you had to do to get out of it. You know, just little things that if she was still there while her children were growing up, conversation and things that happened in life, she'd be able to share these things. And, you know, I also felt that, like, a recipe card, some people, when they think about writing something, it's like, oh, heavens, you know, here I have this blank screen in front of me.
I'm not
a writer. But just, like, answering a simple question on a recipe card where there isn't much room anyway, she loved the idea, and so she did make recipe boxes for her children. And she actually left a gift behind for me, too, in that in writing that response to her, I realized that in my own recipe box that there was a story behind every recipe.
That's great. That's really true. So you decided to sort of unfold the stories, as you say here, if happy, if disorderly life, you know, and you've been through a lot in your life. You've really, you know, gone through a lot of changes. But what's so cool is you are a successful person. You've come out really healthy, physically and mentally, and you know, you're here to share some of these experiences with the world. So I'd like to know if you can tell some of the listeners, what were some of the personal issues that you had to overcome as a teen, an adult, and even a child, you know, when you were growing up? What were some of these really tough situations that you were faced with?
Well, I think in looking back, which, boy, when you write a memoir, you're really looking back and kind of digging through it all. And I also want to preface, you know, I'm not into a blame my parents sort of thing. I'm really more into looking back and figuring out, okay, who said this and why they acted like that and why I did and why I feel the way I do today. And in looking back, self-esteem has always been a difficult thing for me to deal with. And I grew up in a house where my dad was an alcoholic, and my mother worked very hard to compensate for that. I mean, she was really the main breadwinner. But the worst part of it was is that everybody kind of pretended that that wasn't going on. That, you know, that dad wasn't really drinking. And, and even though I would help my mom carry him into bed on many occasions, you know, because he was sick in the other room. And it was kind of, emotionally, the house was, I mean, I was loved. I didn't doubt that my parents loved me in the best way that they could, but emotionally, our house was kind of cold and distant. Consequently, when I was growing up, I don't think I really ever had a chance to kind of get in touch with myself. You know, I spent a lot of years, like, looking at other people, thinking, oh, that, that looks like a cool person. Okay, I'm going to try to be like her or like him, and, and I'm going to try to get this person to like me and that. And finally, along the way, I realized that the person I had to get to like, I needed to learn to like me.
No, that's really, that's an insight, and a lot of people don't come to it. They don't get to it, you know, ever. I mean, so... This is really true. You know, that happens a lot in alcoholic and drug addicted families, and also where there's, you know, if there's a mental disorder that, you know, is difficult too with one or two of the parents, you know, they kind of, the other parent tries to compensate and pretend, you know, the pink elephant isn't sitting in the room. You know, it just doesn't exist. Everything's okay. Daddy's sleepy today, or he's not feeling too well. He's had a little too much medicine, you know. But, you know, that's the problem, you know, and the kids, and God bless her for trying to, you know, hide that. God bless her for trying to make everything okay. But, you know, in the meanwhile, she was conflicted. And of course, you and your siblings were extremely conflicted as well, because you have
And worse, I mean, I was an only child.
I had a stepsister.
No brothers and sisters.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, you're left to yourself, and, and then you don't really even learn, like, you know, kids learn how to do things like cook and build a treehouse and things like that, but there's, like, an emotional growth, too, that you have, and mine kind of, I don't know, I just, there's a chapter in my book called Loose Wires, and I kind of went through a lot of my life just with loose wires. They were just kind of flying around up there.
Well, you had to put it together because you didn't have anyone really to show you how to put things together and how to do things and how to have a whatever that is normal, you know, childhood experiences. Because when we're involved in caregiving much of our lives for one or two of our parents, you know, we truly... I mean, we grow up real fast. We become very mature and internalize all this, and this is my responsibility. And trying to make everything nicey-nice, you know, and everything's wonderful. And I'm going to pretend like, okay, I have to pretend for Mom that everything's normal and everything's wonderful. But, you know, it's difficult because basically you're a child, and then you're a teen with a lot of maturity and a young adult going, what? You know, what's been happening in my life? And you know.
I mean, it's like, I even think, you know, as a teenager, I got pregnant when I was 16, and, and looking back, I think I was just, you know, that was my way of, okay, I'm looking for love and affection. And I know it sounds cliche, but I actually think, the cliche that people talk about, there's a lot of truth in it.
Oh, there really is.
Yeah, you know, that you're, okay, this person is paying attention to me, so this makes me feel good, so I'll go down this path. And, of course, that was a disaster.
Well, you know, when you're, you usually is when you're that young. But I mean, again, coming from your background, you don't, you know, it's very difficult. And you think, well, this boy or this guy or whatever, ooh, he must really care for me. And then I'm going to have a baby. And then that person will love me unconditionally. You know, that because that's my child. And then I'll have somebody in my life to love me. And that's, you know, that's what happens a lot. I mean, it's really true. So,
and I think what's worse for a lot of, you know, young girls who get pregnant and then have a child, I think, it's kind of like, I'm glad in my family, I've kind of broken the cycle because when you're young and no one, you know, as you were talking about, no one was there like to mentor to show you how, this is how you raise a child. Then obviously when you have a child, when you're still a child, you don't know how to raise a child, and that cycle could just keep going on and on and on unless somehow someone or something stepped in to break it and everybody woke up, and then, you know, down the road it changes.
No, it's really true. That it just happens a lot. I see it a lot, you know, in families, unless, like you said, the chain is broken and there's, you know, a self-awareness of I can't do this, and I'm not going to actually do this to my child, which you
right.
didn't. So, you know, which is wonderful because, it, you know, it does happen in the generations and the generations, and then you finally, you know, like you came out and your child, very successful. I mean, there's self-awareness there, which really, you're very lucky because you had a lot of introspection and trying to figure out what was going on in your life and why this happened and what happened. And, you know, obviously you got that together, which is great. Did you ever get into therapy at all? Or did you ever talk with someone who was a wonderful mentor to you who helped you?
I didn't get into therapy when I was a kid because, you know, back then when I was growing up, you know, anyone who went to see a therapist or even spoke of
you
know, it was...
Yeah, a mental disorder.
Yeah,
that's
it was
right.
Totally taboo.
Yeah,
as
sure.
an adult, I have went in kind of to see a therapist, and sometimes I go in and spot check, but I really think that for me, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, gee, what turned you around? There wasn't any one thing that turned me around. But looking back, I mean, I did have what I guess you might refer to as mentors, though I don't think that those people knew
mm-hmm.
that they were actually, you know, that I was considering them a mentor. And so today in my own life, it's not that I'm into some, like, I'm not a new age person or anything. I mean, I'm not like saying, you know, da-da-da-da, you know, something goes off in my head. But I really do try to listen to myself because I think that everybody is presented with opportunities where
mm-hmm.
just like saying something to someone or somehow interacting with someone, even on a very small basis,
mm-hmm.
that later on in that person's life, that was a huge thing for
them. It's true. It's amazingly true. I think so. And, you know, when we're a little older, wow, you know what? That really stuck with me. Just one person who you know, affects us can really change your life. You're right. So, Suzanne, by the way, if you just tuned in, listeners, here on LA Talk Radio with Dr. Michelle, you're on the couch with me and special guest author Suzanne Beecher. She's written the book Muffins and Mayhem, Recipes for a Happy, If Disorderly Life, which is a great read. You get great recipes, too. And she's got cool stories attached to all of her recipes. And, you know, she's just kind of, you know, talking about her childhood years, her evolution from single, you know, teenage mom and to a successful businesswoman, which she really is. And we'll be talking about that DearReader.com a little bit as well, so you can check that out and get tuned on to that, because I know, Suzanne, you've helped a lot of people through that as well. But anyway, moving on here, can you just sort of share some ideas about how you overcame some of these issues to be the successful mom and grandmom and wife and the businesswoman that you are?
Well, you know, it sounds strange, but my husband, who will be married 33 years in December,
congratulations.
And, yeah, thank you.
Wow.
And I honestly have to say it just keeps getting better and better.
Wow.
Of course, this isn't my first marriage. It's not my husband's first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds strange, but really when my husband and I got married, I mean, I kind of tell people sometimes my husband homeschooled me a little bit.
Yeah.
And that doesn't maybe sound too romantic, but when you feel better about yourself,
yes.
the romance is better too.
That's right.
And it's like, I don't know how, but I hooked up with, you know, a person who was the total opposite of me. My husband didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't, you know, just
mm-hmm.
really straight guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I met him, he had two businesses, typesetting and a shopper he was publishing, and he was raising his two children. He had custody of them, and
wow.
you know, and I was still, you know, running around with some loose wires, not as many, but plenty of loose wires. In fact, when I met him, I'd just been in a motorcycle accident, and so his business was in the basement of his townhouse.
Yes,
his typesetting business. So I'm coming down the steps, cast on one leg, ace bandage on another, crutches. And I'm drinking like a vodka, you know, in the afternoon while I'm doing my work for someone, you know.
Right.
So I mean, obviously my wires were still flying around up there.
Yeah.
But here's this straight laced guy who like just is kind of like a fairy tale thing, almost instantly like, wow, this woman is great, you know, I'm I'm wild about this woman. Of course, typical guy, I mean, he never called. I ended up calling him for some business advice, and we got together then. But really, the relationship that I have with my husband, I'm so blessed.
Yeah.
He says he was put here to take care of me, and I mean, who can argue with that?
Wow, that's wonderful. But you know, it seems like he was, huh? But in reality also, though, Suzanne, you've pulled yourself up out of difficult situations, and you really have taken care of yourself. I mean, you know, you've overcome the addictions, and well, it was mostly alcohol, right? You were kind of having issues with alcohol.
Well, it was alcohol, and it was also speed at that time that I was addicted to. And it is true. I mean, the person, your own person has to decide you're going to make a change in your life and have to be open to that. And there is something inside of me, and I credit my mother for that. You know, I mean, I never had the kind of relationship that I wanted with my mother and that I hoped for. But there was something in my mother that was passed on to me, and that was that she had this attitude that whatever had to be done, she was going to find a way to do it.
Wow.
And
so, you
know, deep down inside of me, even when things are really rough, you know, and I've gotten myself into situations, there is something down there that I can grab onto and say, okay, I know I'm going to make it through.
Right. And you learned that from your mom, basically. I mean, the survival technique.
Yes.
And, you know, she was basically, and so were you, but she was on the larger scale a caregiver for your alcoholic dad. So, I mean, you know, you build up those. You have to be a strong person, basically. You know, you really have to have it together. So, you know, in keeping with that, what are some of the lessons that you can share with listeners that you've learned to, you know, help them lead a happier life?
Well, for me, happiness comes in play, you know, kind of like getting in touch with, you know, everybody has that little kid inside of them and they really want to play. They just need an invitation. So I make a point, and I'm lucky too because I have two grandchildren here encourage me.
That's great.
But even before I had grandchildren, I own bubble machines.
Yeah.
I advise everyone, if you don't own one, you should own, you know, at least two. And I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but I live in a historical home and I have a huge yard with a lot of flower gardens, and there's this like overhang out front, and I will set a bubble machine up on top of a cement post out front, and I'll sit in my screen and porch, and the bubbles will just laugh out over the road and the sidewalk, and people will be walking by and I'll hear them giggle and laugh, and I'll hear them say things like, oh, this is the woman who has that bubble machine.
That's cool.
This is her house.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I'm in a, you know, blue mood for something or need a little motivation, it cheers me up. It cheers them up. It's loads of fun.
Yeah, it is. You know, anything like that. No, you're right. Going back to childhood memories or going back to things or, you know, finding a lot of the joy in things that made us laugh and be happy as a child. I mean, that's what it's about, too. You know, it's like getting a lot of people come to me. They have, you know, depressive issues or they're trying to overcome some issues. And I say, first of all, these are serious and I take you seriously and I appreciate you sharing this stuff with me. But you got to lighten up a little bit. You know, you've got to learn how to lighten up. And that's one of the first steps is, like you said, Suzanne, don't take yourself so seriously all the time. I mean, it's difficult to see beyond the fog because we're trying to, you know, kind of get through it and crawl out of it and find who we are, but we can't even see in front of us. But, you know, it's really important, like you said, to go back to some of the childhood joys and try to find that joy as a child, you know, that you used to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, including myself, I see it happen over and over again, though I hopefully I'm getting better at it. But sometimes I'll get so caught up in my own problems and worries and things like that. So, I mean, another thing I do frequently is I'll do something for somebody else. I bake a lot of chocolate chip cookies, like even at Dear Reader, my online book club.
Yeah.
You know, I write a column there. Usually it's not about books, but once a month I bake and I overnight 2 dozen cookies to about 6 readers.
Ooh,
and then they send in, you know, photos. But I bake around, you know, I bake all the time chocolate chip cookies. They're in my freezer. You know, the bug guy stops by, the UPS driver. Sometimes I'll just walk downtown and I'll walk in someone's store. You know, I live in Sarasota and most of them are smaller businesses downtown. And I'll just hand the person behind the counter a bag filled with chocolate chip cookies just because.
You're a cool lady. You're lots of fun. I'm going to get on your chocolate chip cookie group there. Good stuff.
Well, I mean, it's so cool. I mean, I just went to the acupuncturist today, or early this morning.
Yeah.
And a few days ago, I had stopped by because I'm giving my grandson, he's 3-year-old, he loves to bake cupcakes. He's really into that, so I'm baking with him.
That's great.
So I had dropped off some stuff at the acupuncturist.
Yeah.
And today when I was in, I mean, they were just, they're always nice to me, but they were smiling and laughing and talking about the cupcakes and telling me stories about how they were sharing it with so-and-so. And
yeah.
Just a lot of fun.
Oh, it is a lot of fun. And, you know, the big thing, too, you know, part of healing and you know, feeling better and moving on and teaching others how to make the most out of their lives, too, is giving something, whether it's chocolate chip cookies, whatever it is, whether it's having, a very successful online book club, DearReader.com, like you have. It's giving. That is therapeutic in itself, but giving is... You know, it works in a big cycle. Everybody gets, and then other people learn how to, you know, give and enjoy. And it's just, it's a really wonderful thing to do that you, you know, model here in your book as well. By the way, folks, if you just tuned in, I'm interviewing, but the brain went, bonk! I'm interviewing author Suzanne Beecher. The book's called Muffins and Mayhem, and it's recipes for a happy if disorderly life. And she's talking about a lot of things that she went through growing up and, you know, her evolution into a really healthy, successful businesswoman who's got a great husband and, you know, mom and grandmother and, you know, doing really well, living the good life, not La Vida Loca. She's living the healthy life and helping others out as well. And this book, what I really enjoyed about it, Suzanne, is it's a fun read. It's a fast read. There's some cool recipes in there, too. But, I mean, really, there's stories tagged on to each recipe, and you're basically a lot of memoirs that you have, too. And you talk about some of the really, you know, hilarious situations you've been in. And how they taught you to take life lightly. We're just talking about lighten up a little bit, you know. So can you share some of the crazy things that you kind of learned from and situations where you said, you know what, I'm not going to sweat this. This is, well, of course, the thing you just described of getting in the motorcycle accident and seeing this, your husband now, you know, all bandaged up and you have casts on. He's going, whoa.
Well, there are a lot of, fortunately for me, I mean, the neat thing also I have to say about writing a daily column is that when something weird or unusual happens to me, I say, oh, well, this is great. I can write about it.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely.
This is good. But I think back in listening to your question, I think back of when my husband and I first moved to Florida. We've been here about 17 years now. And so we had met some brand new friends, and it was a New Year's Eve party. So brand new friends, and I had on a brand new black velvet dress.
Yeah.
And we were having a good time at the party. I went in to use their bathroom, and they had a big white rug in the bathroom. And I looked down on the rug, and there was black all over. I mean, my dress was all over the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
So I'm like, you know. I'm like brushing it off and shaking off the rug, you know, and throwing it in the trash.
Yeah.
And then when I open the door and I like look out, it went out into the kitchen. I look on the kitchen floor. There I was, all over the kitchen floor.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's like we didn't really know anybody at the party. We were just meeting folks. So it was, I must confess that I just didn't like openly say, oh, well, look at this, guys. You know, I'm all over the floor.
I'm shedding.
I kind of shuffled my foot along the floor while talking to people, and I ended up gathering enough of my dress up to return it to the store.
There you go. Either that or carry a whisk broom every time you go out in a dress, right?
That's right.
Well,
I can't imagine what these people thought.
That's so funny. I like that. That's a good story. That's one of those most embarrassing moment things too, you know, you're like, oh my God, I know that they're looking at me and I know that they're thinking, what is this girl doing? Who is this woman? But I mean, you know, stuff happens. You just roll with it and you just laugh about it. That's the thing.
Well, it is. And truthfully, if I would have, that evening, if I would have just announced, oh, well, look at this, you know, my dress is falling, probably would have met a lot more people than we ended up meeting, because it would have been a great conversation.
That's right. Exactly. It's really, that's true. Everybody can
kind of. Would you like to help me sweep up my dress?
There you go. And again, if you're vulnerable, and sometimes when we make fun of ourselves, people kind of tend to like you. You know, people kind of say, well, this person's really vulnerable and pretty open, and I like that. You know, they're not trying to hide anything, and they're pretty open. So, you know what I really liked also about your book, Suzanne, is chapter 15. You talk about how difficult it was to cope with your mother's passing, and maybe you can share with the listeners how you overcame, you know, much of that grief. I mean, I know we always grieve. We never get over it per se, but what are some of the suggestions that you can give to listeners that really helped you kind of move on?
Well, you know, one big thing for me, and I even write about it in the book, it was actually, I mean, I don't know how people will take this, but actually it was a big surprise to me that I grieved as deeply as I did for my mother's passing.
Yeah.
You know, I was visiting one of those storekeepers and put cookies into her one time and didn't really know her, and somehow she got to talking about her mother, and she just, oh, I said, wow, you know, you must really have a wonderful relationship with your mother. And she said, no, not at all. And I said, well, I don't understand. And she went on to tell me this story that was just amazing. And, you know, she got pregnant when she was young, and her parents literally threw her out of the house. And I said, well, I don't understand how you can miss your mother so much. And because she said, oh, I think about her every day, even though she's gone. And and I said, well, that may be for you, but I, you know, I don't have a good relationship with my mother. So how could I possibly miss something that I never had?
Right.
And she looked at me and she said, oh, but she said, you will. You'll miss your mother. And, you know, she's my friend now. And actually, she's right. I do.
I
miss my mother. So I think for a lot of people, especially if they don't have a very good relationship with their mother, I think it really does come as a huge surprise to them. And at first I didn't really know what to do with my feelings, because I felt like, well, I've grieved long enough, especially because we didn't have a great relationship. And for me, being able to write about it, and I really think for anybody who's grieving, who's trying to even describe a loss for themselves, so they can, you know, like put it in words for themselves. I think that writing is a great outlet for that. And I don't think that people have to write so anything makes sense. I think you just start writing the words that come into your mind.
Exactly.
And probably three or four paragraphs down, will really be the words that you need desperately to hear.
Right, right.
And
it's like processing in a journal. You're just doing streams of consciousness, your thoughts and your feelings, and you're focusing on that. And that's what, you know, it brings the stuff to surface, and you actually realize it and see it. And then from there, there's no more shoving it down. You acknowledge it, and you can continue to write and move on about it. And again,
and I mean, you'll still feel, you know, you'll still feel the loss, and you'll still feel the sadness, but at least, I don't know, for me, at least if I'm able to understand a good possibility why I'm feeling a certain way, it makes it easier for me to deal with it, because then I can say, you know, I call it sometimes like, you know, that the boogeyman's hanging out underneath my bed, and so I kind of start to cycle of thought, you know, and it just goes negative, and worry and worry, and fear, or maybe grieving, whatever it is that I happen to be doing. And so actually what I've done over the years is I've rehearsed ahead of time. You know, I refer to it that, like, when you're a kid, you have these fire drills, and you can't practice a fire drill when the building's on fire. So, I mean, ahead of time, I have just come up with a sentence. It doesn't really have anything to do with what I'm worried or afraid of, or the sadness that I'm feeling. But the sentence is, somebody should have told me about that when I was a kid. What that does for me, because I've rehearsed it, is it's like kind of, here it is again.
Here's
that feeling. And I know that I don't quite know what to do with this. I know it scares me. I know it makes me feel very sad. But I've been here before, and here it is again, and so I'm going to acknowledge it, and we're
going
to sit, you know, sit together for a while.
And you find that, you know, you when you do sit together for a while and you do internalize, nothing's going to happen. It's the same thing with, you know, when you're working through phobias and fears. It's called exposure therapy. You allow yourself to learn it. You allow yourself to, you know, be exposed to it, and you learn, you know what? I'm not going to die from this. You know, I may pass out from having a panic attack because I'm scared, but all, you know, whatever it is, I'll get through it. And repetition, you know, you keep exposing yourself to the feeling and keep acknowledging it. And some way, somehow, our brains start to work through it, and we get better with it. You know, we in our own process and time, as you have, obviously, by your successful life, you know, work through so many of your, you know, early issues and you know, you're so successful. I'm really impressed. And I love the book, by the way. It's really a fun read.
You.
It's a fast read, too. It's a fun read as well. And by the way, if you can tell the listeners how they can get a hold of the book, I'm sure that they'd be interested in that.
Well, you can buy the book it should be in a lot of bookstores. Sometimes you go in the bookstore, you might not find it, but all the major bookstores sell it. That you know, Amazon, all the major places online sell it.
Yeah.
Your local bookstore, or you can just call them; they can order a copy. And I invite people to visit my Muffins and Mayhem website too, because you can go there and you can create your own cookbook of memories. It's very cool. You can look through your recipe box. You can enter in, you know, like your recipe for shrimp salad or something. And again, you don't have to be a writer. You might just have a memory of shrimp salad that every time you make it, you know, Aunt Alice covets the bowl, and one time she scoops them out ahead of time and hid it so she'd have leftovers to take home, you know.
whatever. I mean, it's good memories. It brings up good reminiscences about things. So that is so cool. And also they can check out your book club, DearReader.com. You know, and that's it's a really successful online book club. So if you're into books, folks, and you'd like to connect with Suzanne, you can also check out DearReader.com. And so this is the best way. What is the best way to get in touch with you if listeners have any questions about your book or they'd like more information?
They can just send an email to Suzanne at DearReader.com.
Great.
And if you go to either one of those sites, the email address is there, and I do answer all of my mail, and I love to hear from readers. Actually, when I started the book clubs years ago, I didn't envision the interaction with readers. Now it's the best part of my day.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for being on the show. It's really terrific talking to you. You're such a cool lady, and I'm sure a lot of readers will be interested in this and kind of understand what you work through in your life to become the successful and happy person you are. You're an inspiration to folks, Suzanne.
Thank you very kindly.
Thank you so much for calling in, and take good care now. Look forward look forward to your next book.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's author Suzanne Beecher. Again, her book is Muffins and Mayhem, Recipes for a Happy, If Disorderly Life. And it's a good read, and it's a lot of fun. She recalls her own childhood years, which were difficult. And she, you know, went from being a single, drug-addicted teenage mother to successful businesswoman. She's a successful mom, grandmother, and has the love in her life, her husband. And how, you know, hey, that's, I love success stories. Because that's what, you know, this is what inspires us to keep on going. And, you know, I have a lot of people who write me and who come to me and talk to me about their struggles. And when you hear struggles like Suzanne and what she's had to overcome, it really is inspiring. And you get to, you know what, I can do that too. I can take care of myself too. I can work it out. And you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, as you always are this time. We begin at 11 Pacific Standard Time here at LA Talk Radio, the world's most listened to talk radio station. And since you're still on the couch with me, I promised you that I would be answering some of your emails online here that you wrote me. You contacted me through docmichelle@aol.com and cleared it with you. So we're going to rock. Here we go. Dear Dr. Michelle, have a problem. I met someone online and fell head over heels in love with them. Can you tell me when I should meet her for the first time? We've been talking for about 5 months. We chat, we Skype. She's great. I think I'm in love. What do I do? And when do I meet her? Ooh, that's a tough one. It's a tough question because there's no definitive answer that works for anybody. You know, see, the thing is it's fun to keep on talking with someone, the mystery person, even if they're on Skype, and I really hope that's the person who you're looking at and talking to. But it's my advice is that it's probably a good idea to meet sooner than later. You see, when you meet somebody you like that isn't long distance, you get to know them face to face, right? Yep. And this is, by the way, from Dan. So you get to watch and you learn the different nuances. You see their body language and you know what I'm saying? Well, in most cases, you don't get that if you're in a long distance relationship, right? So even if you're using the webcam or, you know, the voice chat, Skype or whatever, you'll miss out on a lot of subtle gestures. There's a little bit of a delay on it. It's blurry sometimes. It's really, I don't know about you, but mine is sometimes. But I mean, I look at the person and I can talk to them and get a feel. But you'll miss out on subtle tone changes in their voice, pitch changes, you know, really good eye contact, movements, and words sometimes altogether. So it doesn't make a long-distance relationship impossible. But I think if you're going to pursue a relationship with somebody, Dan, who is long-distance and you met online and you're, I don't know how far she is from you, whether she's on the other side of the world, but I think it's best to meet sooner than later. Because if you wait for too much time to pass and you fall really hard for someone, you start to feel like you can't live without them or you don't want to live without them and you want this person to be part of your life for a long time. And, you know, the thing is sometimes we build up these fantasies. It is exciting. It's very exciting. But the problem is you've got to see them in person. It's the real deal. And what I've heard sometimes from online relationships, and this is not a negative because I'm all for online dating and people meeting people online. But what I've heard is there's finally when the meeting takes place, there's no spark. There's like no chemistry, you know. And what's really worse sometimes is you learn, it's not worse, it's good because you're finding out, you're getting with it, like I'm suggesting. Get with the meeting as soon as you can so you can learn who they are, because sometimes we find out face to face, and even in one night of a dinner face to face, we find out that that's not all what we expected, either by intentional, you know, misleading or assumptions of things. And, you know, you're creating this fantasy continually until you really look at that person, you see. So meeting face-to-face is really important. You'll learn about the other person's nuances and subtleties. And then when you have to, you know, spend time apart, you'll be more in tune with each other. So the other person has to go back to wherever they're from. Then you'll know exactly what their nuances are, what they look like, how they laugh. And you can, you know, gather from that personal meeting what they're doing when you're talking to them Skype, or you're texting them and you're online if you have audio, whatever. See? And then you'll know each other well enough to know if you can make it long term. Right? Some of my, you know, clients or people who've come to me or written to me here on LA Talk Radio say, well, you know, I've had to meet with them several times. That's great! Try to meet with them several times so you can really define who they are and if you really want to carry through with this relationship. You know? And also when you meet, let me just suggest this to you, Dan. Find somewhere that is, you know, is not considered home territory for either of you. Make sure you meet somewhere public for the first time. Make sure you let your friends know where you are. I mean, yeah, you're a guy and everything, but who knows? You know, a lot of women are really fearful of meeting a guy that who they've been, you know, communicating with online for a long time. And, you know, they let their girlfriends know. They let a guy friend know where they're at, where they're going to be, and they kind of walk around and kind of check them out in a restaurant or whatever. But this is really good for a guy, too. You don't know. You just don't know who you're meeting with, right? Can you make a long-distance relationship work by meeting early in a relationship? Yeah. And you probably have a better, stronger bond by having that time together earlier on, right? Then you don't have this longing and desire, and you don't have this fantasy world going on, you see? Yeah. The sooner you meet, the sooner you're going to know if it's worth meeting her at all and being with her in the long run. So that's my idea. That's my suggestion, Dan. Check it out. Get with her as long as you can. I have a client who actually well, she's no longer a client, but at one time she was online and she had met this guy who was in New York. We're here in Los Angeles. And he arranged for her to fly her in and meet him. And just their chats were wonderful. They never saw each other, but he described himself. They had pictures and all that. She actually met him, and he was nothing the way he described himself. He was rather angry. He had an agitation to his personality, and she felt immediately that he was going to be a controlling person and an uncomfortable person. They went to a nearby cafe, chatted, and actually she called a friend in New York, stayed with her, and left and said, "That's it, I'm done." So she had waited about 6 months, though, and had been communicating with this guy and kind of thought he was wonderful and great and all that. See, so the face-to-face meeting is the most important thing that you have to do. You have to clear that out. Make it in a public place. Don't make it close to your home. And just see how it goes. And that's my suggestion. I think it's a really good idea to do face-to-face as soon as you can. As soon as you start having a really serious interest in this person. I mean, you know, not just kind of get there. All right, this is Dr. Michelle, and I have enjoyed being on the couch with you today. I hope you have. You can stay on the couch if you like. We have more great shows coming up here, along with CBS News. And I'll be back next Friday, as I always am, at 11 o'clock Pacific Standard Time in the morning here on the West Coast. You can find me at DrMichelle@AOL.com. Love to hear from you. Or you can check me out at my website, which is Dr. Michelle Therapy, Dr. Michelle with two L's, therapy.com. Have a great day, and as I always say, do take care of yourself first. You see, get it together, and then you'll be great for other folks. And give. They'll never forget to give. All right, have a good one. Bye-bye now.